Welcome to the Ivy Podcast. We're just two aunties sharing our experience through the lens of one Blackfoot woman and one Anishinaabe woman. And we are Indigenous Vision, an educational nonprofit based in Montana and Arizona. We are 100% Indigenous led, and this is our podcast. Check us out at indigenousvision.org to learn more about our work, make a donation, or play back any of our radio shows and this episode.
Hello, welcome to podcast 78. We are the Indigenous Vision team coming to you live. I think this might be our final episode for 2022. My name is Melissa. I'm feeling fabulous and I'm not even in the holiday spirit. I just feel fabulous. How are you, Sutta?
I'm doing good. I always get into like the, I don't know if it's so much holidays. Well, that's not true. I decorate like a crazy lady and have bins and stuff like that. But it's not like, you know, because I'm not a religious person. I'm a spiritual Blackfoot practicing person. And I think me, like a lot of other people, have just really adhered to the gathering of family and the feasting. And so, yeah, I'm doing it again. I'm making a big old list of stuff. You don't even want to hear it. There's like 20 things on it.
So you're hosting your family, I'll call it the family dinner, the family feast over the big day this weekend. That's going to be at your house again?
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
I'm not making food. I'm just kind of making like snacks and munchy stuff. It's going to be
awesome.
Good. It's way too long of a list. I still want to read it because it's so fun. I'm going to make butter toffee, pecans and walnuts, a bunch of different cookies, oatmeal, sugar, no bake, peanut butter, sugar cookie, candy cane sugar cookies. They're like the peanut butter kisses with the little kiss on top. Popcorn balls, mini. Everything's going to be miniature. Butter tarts, miniature. All my bread are going to be mini loaves. That's going to be cute. Mini cakes. Oh, I have pumpkin left over from like the fall that I need to make. And those are, I'm going to make them into pumpkin whoopie pies. I don't know. It's horrible, Melissa. Really,
that's
bad.
Not horrible, that's like amazing.
And caramel apple cookies, those are gonna be the best.
Wow, caramel apple cookies, that's like me right there. I was just at the grocery store yesterday and I was just telling myself in my head, I love apples. And I even like playfully did a little list of like all the apple stuff I liked as I was walking through the produce. I was like, apple pie, apple sauce. I love apple crumble, apple crisp, apple Pop-Tarts. I just went on and on. And I really love apple. Apple and oatmeal is like my jam in the morning. There's just something about apples, apple cider. There's a wonderful orchard here that every summer they make their own apple cider from fresh Nevada grown apples. And it is so delicious. I'm salivating. So
really?
If you made apple caramel cookies and I was at your house, I would probably eat them all and give myself a gallbladder attack.
Oh, that's been the problem is I've been testing out some of the recipes. So I've made like, you know, 2/3, half the list and it's gone. It's well, I threw part of it. I'll bake something and then I individual portion it up and throw it in the freezer for later. There was a little bit of that, but it's gone. And this banana bread I made this time, I was so good. And it's just, it's gone. So I'm trying to like, cause the food day is only a couple days away. Right. And all of these baked goods can keep. So I'm trying to get caught up, but my son, he gets so excited. Onan, he just literally does a happy dance. It's so cute and innocent to see him say, what you're making? And I'll say, you know, caramel apple cookies. And he claps his hands and jumps up and down. And it reminds me of the Nutty Professor when his mom was like, cakes and pies, cakes and pies.
Yes. I love the Nutty Professor. That's like ongoing joke with my family too.
Cakes and pies. Oh my gosh. I did it all. Yeah, I made it.
Yummy. I'm probably going to hit up a buffet. Usually I go hang out in the desert by myself, like Death Valley, for example, but I'm just not feeling it this year. I was online last night looking at like where I should go, but there's just something in me that says don't go. So I'm going to listen to my intuition and just stay home, probably FaceTime or, you know, video chat my folks for a while and see how they're doing. Cause my mom always cooks up a big dinner as well. I've lived my life well fed with her. So I'm going to see how their holiday is going. And then I might just hit up a Vegas buffet. I think I live down the street from one that's like pretty reasonably priced. They've got lots of vegetarian, vegan options because I'm trying to get back on the wagon again. I've been having I went to my work holiday party and I ate a bunch of pastries and I drank all these sugary drinks. And my gallbladder has been upset since then. Anybody who has gallbladder issues, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It is totally in my court as to how my gallbladder is going to feel. So I need to get it together. And this is the worst time of the year for me to have to restrict myself because, like I said, everybody's got goodies everywhere. I even participated in the Secret Santa at work. I really was okay, you know what? I'm going to do something festive. And the lady who got me my gift, but also put in a pile of candies and chocolate. And I ate them all. And I thought, ooh, that was a lot just for one sitting. It was like Halloween all over again.
Yeah.
Craziness.
Well, that's the problem at my house is once Halloween hits, it's constant treats and candies and foods. And I kind of go into this baking storm until my son's birthday in January.
Wow. That's almost 3 months for you of just solid goodies.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't be hard on myself. I eat what I want when I want it. I mean, I try not to binge or overindulge but if I want it, I'm gonna have it. So, and then I'm not gonna, I'm too old to feel guilty about what I'm eating, right? I'm gonna go out and hike the hill and work out and get back to a healthy diet tomorrow.
And that's how I operate too. I just eat whatever, but now it's affecting and causing pain. And I'm okay, my body is literally saying, stop putting all that in your body. So I gotta watch what I eat to not set it off, because gallbladder attacks go into the night and they're relentless and you can't lay down because it's so painful. So you have to stay up, right? It's one of those things and it really sucks. I used to struggle with this in my 20s when I was a heavy meat eater. And I remember it got so bad. I had to go to the hospital one time and they shot me up with morphine. It was the one time in my life where I had to go to the hospital. And as soon as I checked in with the nurse, she was had a greasy pizza last night, did you? And I was yeah, I did. She's typical gallbladder attack. So it's really rich, greasy foods that triggers it. And I'm at the state now where I've kind of maxed out on them and I have to stop because I don't want to be in pain and it sucks and it makes me sleepy and it hurts my back and it just affects my body. And I'm just feeling my age and I'm woo, I got to stop.
I know this. I always think about man, maybe I should stop making all this stuff. But I don't know, my mom did that. She, at some point in my teenage years, she went from cooking fry bread and bannock and stews and big, awesome dinners to making lentils and veggies. And I'm like, what are you doing, mom? And all of my sisters and brothers hated her new diet. And, she was just trying to eliminate the junk and she, So I think that's what I did. Cause remember our first life spa? I had candy, a bowl of candy and some Powerades, I think. But we picked mostly clean eating, barbecue, roasted veggies. The grandmas, Hopi grandmas, made traditional meals for us. But the kids hated the healthy meals. And I didn't buy enough junk or yummy foods. And it's because I forgot that moment, when you're transitioning your diet and you feel like you're starving and don't have enough. And because you're so used to all the greasy, salty, sweet.
Yes. Yeah. Story of my life.
So I forget about that point because it's a transition where it's almost like a detox, right? And then you're not so addicted to those taste buds being activated or whatever.
Yeah, I'm having to go into the mode where I'm trying to transition the taste buds to go back to whole food, plant-based, with a hint of seafood every now and again. So I guess you could, if we're going to play labels, I would be a pescatarian now.
With seafood, I could never do. I could barely do fish because of Blackfoot. Don't.
Oh, really?
We had one clan that was a fish eaters clan. And
oh, I love fish.
Right. I can't. I mean, I went to Alaska once when I was 15, and then we fixed a fish wheel for this elder, and he let us have all the fish that day. And the salmon were huge, you know, like those 2 foot long fat salmons. And we had to like scare away some eagles from sitting on his fish wheel box. And then we went in and we got 3, because we were a group of 3 large salmon fed a group of 25 kids that wow. day. Because yeah, I know it's really hard to, we must've had a bunch of sides. I don't know. Maybe I was focused on the fish, but that was the only fish I ever ate that I really enjoyed. And it's because it was a salmon that I pulled from the river in Alaska and cooked myself. And I just have never tasted, there was no canned salmon. We use canned fish and berries for ceremonies a lot. And it's just not.
I'm not a fan of salmon. I'll admit it. I'm a tuna girl all the way. Pickerel, catfish. Give me my good old lake fish. I love it.
Lake fish. Oh my goodness. You're a beach Indian. I was just thinking of that again when a couple days ago, and I'm like, wow, that's like ultimate beach Indian status, going to Hawaii. And
I was into it. Literally into it. Did so I tell you I threw up and everything? Like, it was crazy.
What? No.
Yeah, when I was snorkeling. I went too deep, because I can swim. I actually can swim. So I went a little bit too deep with the snorkel, took a big deep breath in, and it was water, and I got all crazy, and I like swam to the top really quick, and I was like spitting it out and coughing, because it was just a deep bitter salt water that I swallowed, and it was in the back of my nose and the back of my throat, and I'm coughing, and I'm trying to like wave down the lady, one of the crew members, and she comes over to me, she's like, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, I just swallowed a bunch of water. And I'm like trying to tell her that through coughing. And I was like, oh God, I'm going to puke it up. And she's like, just do it. Just puke it up. So she's like holding me. And like, I threw it all up with like my breakfast. And then all the fish came and ate it immediately. Oh, and she's like, don't worry. It's a win-win situation. And I was just like, so blown away by the whole like 45 seconds that all happened. I was like, wow. And it was just, it vanished. And then I calmed down and I coughed and blew my nose. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go back to snorkeling. But it was like me and the fish bonded in Hawaii.
you nourished.
Hawaii is a part of me and I'm a part of Hawaii.
There is a big, strong fish out there swimming around right now. thinking one of those swimming humans might give them food again.
Wow, a burly one, that's for sure.
Amazing. What's your goal for 2023?
Holy smokes, I got goals. I am really feeling myself lately. You know, even with the year I've had, you know, my dad's health went in the toilet. I mean, my sister's house burned down. I got COVID and RSV and all these other flus. I am so excited though about 2023. I'm excited about our cultural humility gigs that we are planning to do. I'm excited to have one in person, hopefully by the spring. I'm excited to visit Montana again. I'm excited to expand my voiceover empire. I'm really looking forward to doing that on the down low. I'm excited to move into a new home and start a new beginning here in Vegas. I'm excited to almost, do I dare say it, get out on the dating market again? Ah. I don't know if I'm ready for that, but I think I am.
I am a relationship person. I've been single for a little while and I like it. That's what I liked a lot about 2022 is I really, because for that year before I was like secretly single, you know, because we were still in a transitioning phase and figuring out our co-parenting and the schedule and all of that. And so I wasn't advertising like relationship status or anything. And then over the past year, I've really, I moved into a new house. It's not new, it's very old, but it's a house with a yard, which is exactly what I wanted. And I'm really grateful for that. And then I'm grateful for the raccoons and the magpies and the birds that sit in my yard. And I started trying to make a relationship with the magpies. It's really hard because I don't want to attract alley cats, but then at the same time, I'm kind of torn. Like, do I attract cats and then call the Humane Society? Cause they're a no-kill society, because it's cold. And with the one kitty that I saw, he looks like a little gray panther. He's such a cutie, and he's fat, but he doesn't have a collar on or anything. So I don't know if he's somebody's, but I'm grateful for my health. This past year, I've like been super concentrated on healthy activities, especially repairing any mental or emotional traumas that I've experienced, not just in this last year, but like over my whole lifetime, right? I'm constantly seeking how to improve health. I think I'm doing good. I think I'm doing better now than I was when I was 20. Yeah, but that's a lot of clean eating. And it's like focusing on calm. And I don't know if we were going to have a guest today, but he got called off to an emergency. But like suicide, we were going to talk about suicide today. And I don't know if most people know, but kids who grow up, and I'm pretty sure Winnipeg fits the bill too, but kids who grow up on the reservation are generally exposed to more violence, like domestic violence or substance induced violence in the community. And when I was growing up, it wasn't that bad. All we had to worry about was alcohol. And now kids today have meth and pills and heroin and all kinds of like opioids and fentanyl to worry about. But when I was growing up, it was just alcohol, and it was still bad then. And it's a different kind of bad now. But most Native kids have PTSD levels of an Iraqi war veteran. That's really saying something. And I think, you know, stats like that always make me think about how much aid Canada and the US collectively send out to countries. And I know it's important, and we're supposed to do those mutual aid type things for other countries as well. But we have like huge health problems, homeless problems, reservations that have 80% unemployment. I mean, there's quite a bit of aid that should be sent to reservation communities. And I say Winnipeg fits the bill because that's the murder capital of the world, right? And you have a large, I think it's like Phoenix, you have one of the largest Native populations, urban Native populations there in Winnipeg, murder capital of the world. That's where stories of MMIW first started coming out a long time ago with the Drag the Red. And you said they're still dragging it and they have to pay for it themselves. And yeah, those stinking Winnipeg cops are contemplating if they should search a landfill when the woman is most definitely there. They're wondering if they should do it. And it's instances like this that make communities feel really jaded and disposable, because especially now our police departments are getting like a lot of funding for weapons and SWAT gear, riot gear. And it's funny because the couple of police departments, they get funded for more gear than they do trainings, right? Like, and our poor cops, they're not trained very, very well in terms of what you really have to. That's why they're putting behavioral health specialists and therapists on staff at police departments, because I don't think a lot of cops, they're just normal people, that they're not equipped to handle the mental crisis that's happening out there right now. And it's because things are bad. People are poor and hungry and desperate. And I don't know, but I'm grateful for the couple of police departments that do attend our training, and the Attorney General's office that attended a training. That those kind of participants in our trainings give me a lot of hope for turning over like systemic policies, because we work in a job where it's really cool to see that instant change, where the average everyday worker is kind of like policy is law. But I think people forget that laws and policies were created and are just written documents that can be amended. There is absolutely no document in the world or policy in the world that can't be amended. Like, prove me wrong. Who's there? Like,
totally.
Yeah, that's one of the things that really irks me as a change management professional is when people say, well, that's the way things are and we can't do anything about it. What can we do? Right. That's the rules. And I'm like, you know, this is a really good example of the rules being unfair and not inclusive and kind of eliminating a large population of the people you're supposed to service. And so if the rules are the rules and more than 50% of the people are having an experience like me, then the rules need to change.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
Let's do it.
I'm really excited to improve my change making skills in 2023, because there are times when I read about the news of Winnipeg that it kind of keeps me up at night. And I think, can Winnipeg ever change? Can the way that it's going, the trajectory of, I don't know, that social conditioning and its history of racial biases and all of its vile MMIWP two-spirited history can ever be reconciled? You know, that kind of thought keeps me up at night, because that's where I'm from. That's where I grew up. That's where the majority of my family still lives, and my friends and all of their children are growing up there. And it really bothers me sometimes. And I think, well, if I just keep learning over here, because I'm here for a reason, and I keep at the work that I'm trying to do, maybe I can go back one day and like help or somehow contribute to the healing, at least, of a lot of the people who are quote unquote stuck there or feel stuck there or not in a position to move. Because I always feel very grateful that I was able to get out of there. And that was because of my radio job. I made enough money to travel. And once I began traveling, I was kind of like the shy little native girl that only knew Winnipeg, slowly woke up to the fact that the rest of the world isn't like that. If you've never lived in Winnipeg, it's really a strange place because of its geographical location. It's kind of in the middle of nowhere. And it's yet it used to be a big hub back in the day. So it had all of these visitors coming through, and not so great things would happen and great things would happen because of that. But I think it carries a strange, dark history of people, Indigenous people, being abused and murdered and getting away with it for so long. Even this past year, they caught that serial killer who was specifically targeting Indigenous women. And that's how they know that there are still, their remains are in the landfills, because he told them, allegedly. I'm going to say allegedly just to save my ass here, but it's just this ongoing thing that it just never ends. And I wonder, how can I contribute? How can I use everything that I'm learning over here? Or is that even my role anymore? So I'm excited to just continue the anti-racism work and just continue building the arsenal. So maybe one day I can go back and kind of intertwine it with the healing that I've personally done because I've left Winnipeg and sobered up and like finally see things clearly and feel everything and processed everything, that I can go back and help a couple dozen people here and there. Like that's where I'm at right now with my learning journey and healing journey, because honestly don't know what else to do.
Yeah, I know. I feel like one of my wins this year is I got to kind of dabble my toes in what it's like to be a professor. I just finished my first semester, and I probably won't have another one for a while until after my PhD work, but I'm just not ready for that yet. And I'm still building Indigenous vision, and kind of we're actually downsizing and trying to tighten up our projects and our activities. That's one of the things, the drivers behind our mapping work. And, you know, in the huge, huge, massive ball of issues, social and environmental issues that we try to map out, instances of discrimination and hate crimes, the things that make the newspapers, Indians getting banned from hotels, things that happen in the supermarket, refusing service to youth basketball teams, all of those things are mapped. You know, are women dying in the hospitals and the ERs and being refused service? All of those things are mapped. And I'm matching those with a layer, a couple of layers. So the MMIP layers, and then as well as our historical narrative layer. And so there's one bronze placard in New York State that I use a lot to display this example of our public education. And this bronze placard is talking about the Clinton and Sullivan campaign, who were two generals colonels in the United States Army. And they did a burn slash and burn technique, where they went and destroyed the farms and gardens and then burned the longhouses to the ground. And my son is actually a survivor descendant of his grandpa who as a 9-year-old boy ran into a burning longhouse and rescued his future wife, who was 3 at the time, underneath the floorboards of a longhouse that was being burned down 9 generations ago by Clinton and Sullivan slash and burn campaign. But this bronze placard justified those actions. And this placard says that due to the aggressive and hostile nature of Indians and their threats to white settlers and the women of the land, they needed to be removed. And so these are our public, unchecked, unvetted public, like if you can put a placard somewhere and you have the money, you can do it. So we also are trying to do that. So if you have money to donate, we will take that money and put up Indigenous narrative placards. And I want them to go side by side. I'm not one of the people who are like, take down that statue of the racist Confederate war general and splash red paint on it. I take down the statue, keep it up, put the real information that's needed by it. Say what they really did. Say that General Baker of Baker's Massacre was an awful drunk and all of his men had hesitations moving in to kill the camp of Blackfoot people. And, you know, nobody wants their American hero to be a drunk that was actually lost and just aggressive, but he was. And so those are truths, right? And they're really crazy truths, but they're needed so that we don't repeat the past. And so what I want to do with those layers is we have people coming into our trainings and people walking out in the streets who say, racism doesn't exist. I've never seen it happen, or it doesn't happen to me. I'm a brown person and I get treated really good. Well, are you a white passing Native person, brown person? Are you a pretty brown person? Because there's been some instances where I'm treated better than like the traditional, like super Native looking Native, because I have brown skin still, but I'm not like dark Native, you know? So I get treated pretty girl privilege, right? I always think how rough it would be if I looked darker or more Indian or more Native, or I had, you know, my grandpa's nose or, you know, something. The treatment would be worse than the little things I've gotten right now. And most of them have been digs at my beauty. Like 5 years old, when the lady told me that her salon wouldn't cut my hair, she was digging at my beauty. And, you know, fast forward 20 some years ahead, and I'm working at Sears, and the middle-aged white lady says that I could not help her because I would not know what looks good on her skin, because look at mine. And I was like, oh shoot. And so I went to get my manager, who was also a brown lady, and said she doesn't want a brown woman to help her.
Jeez.
Yeah. And so all of them, yeah, it's perspective, right? I could sit there and be hurt and let my bucket fill up with the poor me, I've been a victim, or I can use cultural humility and say, I think they've learned a bunch of things over their lifetime that they haven't bothered to check at all, or vet, or challenge. What a boring lifestyle. Reverse racism doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. White people who have drug problems and are experiencing poverty experience discrimination, but it's not the same as experiencing discrimination because of the way you look.
Exactly. It is prejudice, not racism.
Yeah. And they can go to the hospital and get their painkillers when they're actually in pain, whereas I have been treated like a drug addict and have had to have like family members come vet and vouch for me, even to buy a bottle of hairspray. And what white woman out there has gone into a store as an adult woman and had to go out and get somebody from the vehicle to bring in to make sure, to make the cashier sure that I'm not going to be drinking that hairspray? This is a real life experience.
Oh gosh, there's so much to unpack there.
Reverse racism doesn't exist. Discrimination exists, and biases and assumptions and hate and anger exists. But reverse racism does not exist in terms of the proper definition of racism, which is a systemic privilege of whiteness.
And the cognitive dissonance in some of those anti-woke people truly don't believe that. That's something I've had to accept, is like, mm-hmm. they really don't, they tell themselves that doesn't exist. That systemic oppression and racism and all of these systems that we're navigating in is not real.
Reverse racism doesn't exist. Come on now. And I'm not going to waste my time telling people, you know, arguing that it doesn't. So my phone's blowing up. So if reverse racism doesn't exist, then why do federal departments have environmental injustice efforts? Why is there a Superfund site? Why are all of our Superfund sites majority located next to BIPOC communities? It goes on and on.
And this is where the grace is coming in for me. I'm really using that to not go off on this podcast right now. But again, what can I do? I can just keep doing the work that I do and approach each situation individually and calmly.
We can try. I mean, have compassion for ourselves. Like, yeah. Do I really want this to interrupt my energy today? And give me a reason why BIPOC people shouldn't be angry.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots of things to be angry about. And it would be really, really hard for me. I know I could do it. I have the ability. But it would be really hard for me as an adult woman to treat that woman at the salon in Cutbank, Montana, who didn't want to cut my hair, with respect. Now, her not wanting to cut my kind of hair, and then me reflecting her own energy back to her, is that reverse racism? Or is it me just being human, being absolutely bothered and upset that some woman is just hating to hate because she has nothing else to do and she's bored or gets excitement or something from it? I hope all of the kids on the reservation get to travel and get to leave those 2-hour boundaries on that exterior res line to know, or if you live within that 2-hour boundary of a res line, or you live in the city where a lot of hate crimes are happening, do something about it. Don't be the silent one. If you're silent, you're complicit.
100%. Thank you so much for listening to the Indigenous Vision Podcast. Thank you for supporting us for the year of 2022. Our listenership growth has been amazing, and that is thanks to you leaving reviews, liking and sharing, commenting, and of course, a big special thanks to the Apple Podcast folks who run the Spotlight program. Suta and I are super excited for 2023, and we hope that you are rocking with us into the new year. And with that being said, I want to wish you a very happy new year from the Indigenous Vision Podcast. Check out our website, indigenousvision.org, where you can play back any of these episodes, listen to our radio show, learn about our projects and who we are, and of course, sign up for our cultural humility training that's happening January 17th, indigenousvision.org. Thank you.